Speechwork Document 59, Regulation of Women and Child Labor. From the message of the President read at the opening of the first session of the 60th Congress, December 3, 1907. It is certain that for some time to come there will be a constant increase absolutely, and perhaps relatively, of those among our citizens who dwell in cities or towns of some size and who work for wages. This means that there will be an ever-increasing need to consider the problems inseparable from a great industrial civilization, where an immense and complex business, especially in those branches relating to manufacture and transportation, is transacted by a large number of capitalists who employ very much larger number of wage earners. The former tend more and more to combine into corporations and the latter into unions. The relations of the capitalist and wage worker to one another, and of each to the general public, are not always easy to adjust, and to put them and keep them on a satisfactory basis is one of the most important and one of the most delicate tasks before our whole civilization. Much of the work for the accomplishment of this end must be done by the individuals concerned themselves, whether singly or in combination, and the one fundamental fact that must never be lost track of is that the character of the average man, whether he be a man of means or a man who works with his hands, is the most important factor in solving the problem aright. But it is almost equally important to remember that without good laws it is also impossible to reach the proper solution. It is idle to hold that without good laws evils such as child labor, as the overworking of women, as the failure to protect employees from loss of life or limb, can be effectively reached, any more than the evils of rebates and stock watering can be reached without good laws. To fail to stop these practices by legislation means to force honest men into them, because otherwise the dishonest who surely will take advantage of them will have everything their own way. If the states will correct their evils, well and good, but the nation must stand ready to aid them. No question growing out of our rapid and complex industrial development is more important than that of the employment of women and children. The presence of women in industry reacts with extreme directness upon the character of the home and upon family life, and the conditions surrounding the employment of children bear a vital relation to our future citizenship. Our legislation in those areas under the control of the Congress is very much behind the legislation of our more progressive states. A thorough and comprehensive measure should be adopted at this session of the Congress relating to the employment of women and children in the District of Columbia and the territories. The investigation into the condition of women and children wage earners recently authorized and directed by the Congress is now being carried in the various states, and I recommend that the appropriation made last year for beginning this work be renewed, in order that we may have the thorough and comprehensive investigation which the subject demands. The national government has an ultimate resort for control of child labor, the use of the Interstate Commerce Clause to prevent the products of child labor from entering into interstate commerce. But before using this it ought certainly to enact model laws in the subject for the territories under its own immediate control. There is one fundamental proposition which can be laid down, as regards all these matters, namely, while honesty by itself will not solve the problem, yet the insistence upon honesty, not merely technical honesty, but honesty in purpose and spirit, is an essential element in arriving at a right conclusion. Vice in its cruder and more archaic forms shocks everybody, but there is very urgent need that public opinion should be just as severe in condemnation of the vice which hides itself behind class or professional loyalty, or which denies that it is vice, if it can escape conviction in the courts. The public and the representatives of the public, the high officials, whether on the bench or in executive or legislative positions, need to remember that often the most dangerous criminals, so far as the life of the nation is concerned, are not those who commit the crimes known to and condemned by the popular conscience for centuries, but those who commit crimes only rendered possible by the complex conditions of our modern industrial life. It makes not a particle of difference whether these crimes are committed by a capitalist or by a laborer, by a leading banker or manufacturer or railroad man, or by a leading representative of a labor union. swindling in stocks, corrupting legislatures, making fortunes by the inflation of securities, by wrecking railroads, by destroying competitors through rebates. These forms of wrongdoing in the capitalist are far more infamous than any ordinary form of embezzlement or forgery, yet it is a matter of extreme difficulty to secure the punishment of the man most guilty of them, most responsible for them. The businessman who condones such conduct stands on a level with the labor man who deliberately supports a corrupt demagogue and agitator, whether head of the union or head of some municipality, because he is said to have stood by the union. The members of the business community, the educators, or clergymen, who condone and encourage the first kind of wrongdoing, are no more dangerous to the community but are morally even worse than the labor men who are guilty of the second type of wrongdoing, because less is to be pardoned those who have no such excuse, as is furnished either by ignorance or by dire need.